think that wave also, though, was the start of a renaissance in pastry.
There's room to be inspired by everyone, everywhere. Everyone has something to teach. Everyone has something to share.
I felt like you didn't have to ask permission to do anything. Like, you literally could do whatever flavor you wanted, and people were like, yeah, I want it.
Welcome to Kitchen Tape. I'm Rose Wild.
And I'm Cassie Mandietta, and we are so happy to have you here with us for the very first episode of our very first podcast.
Yeah, brand new. We are bringing you a hopefully really fun, enjoyable podcast where you get to learn a lot more about people we love and who inspire us constantly.
Definitely. And I think we're here to highlight all the ways you can be in food without actually working in a kitchen, which is on display through the people we've chosen to interview this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that oftentimes when you think of food, you only think of a kitchen. And so it's been very cool for us to learn this season about different ways of being in food. And I think that you might find a really inspirational path as a result of some of the guests we have lined up this season. Mm-hmm. And we asked them not only about their experiences in food, but also, you know, what makes them tick outside of food, some of their self-care, ways that they build community. Basically, we want you to know that we're whole people and not just
Kitchen robots. Kitchen robots. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole person behind the great dish that you see on the internet or that you get at a restaurant. And we just wanted to really highlight those people. But first, in case you don't know us, we thought it'd be fun to just kind of give you a little background on who we are.
Yeah. Well, do you want to introduce me? Or do I introduce me?
No, I think it's
I think I could introduce myself.
Could you introduce yourself?
I think it's hard to describe, to just sit here and describe yourself as a seasoned podcaster. So maybe you go first and I'll follow your template. I'm really good at that.
Okay. Well, I'm Rose Wild. I am a pastry chef, recipe developer, and cookbook author. I published my first cookbook last year called Bread and Roses. It has since been named a best cookbook of 2023 by Bon Appetit and the LA Times. I'm currently working on my second cookbook proposal. And on a day-to-day basis, I am developing recipes for my Substack, Eat More, as well as creating dream cakes for personal consumption, small events, and weddings and catering throughout the greater Los Angeles and Southern California area.
Damn, okay. She just shat all over me.
Okay. You want to go or you want me to do you?
Let's see what you come up with.
Across from me is the lovely Cassie Mandietta. She is a Instagram and TikTok sensation with thousands of followers. She currently specializes in recipe developing for many brands and clients. She's recently stopped doing cakes, but if you know, you know, and you can still get one. And she runs a very popular Substack called Bake Chats, and it's really good. You should check it out.
Damn, I mean, she did me better than I could do me. Thank you, Rose.
It's cool because Cassie's going to bring a lot of personality and a lot of jokes. So I can bring the facts.
Yeah, you bring the facts, the hard-hitting facts, and I'll break it up. I'll keep it light.
It's like Barbara Walters and Joan Rivers.
That went over my very young head.
So fucking rude. Well, let's do some evening of the playing field, like, we'll ask each other a couple of the questions that we're going to ask our guests throughout the season. Just a few, all of them, just to set the scene.
Yeah.
You want to ask the first question?
I'm going to kick it off with, hi, Rose. How are you? So I want to know, what was your first job in food?
My first job in food. Gosh, my whole life just flashed before my eyes, and all I saw was skating rinks and being an elf for Santa. It's like none of that had anything to do with food.
I mean, there's cookies, right?
That's your whole life. That was my whole life. My whole life.
I only stopped that
last
week.
Well, I started working when I was like 14. So I feel like you flash back really far. Mm-hmm. But I feel like most of my first jobs were kind of forgettable because they were at the front of house. Like I was a server for a really long time in many places that like just didn't stick mm-hmm. in my head as memorable. I think the first place that really does stand out is when I was in college, I guess, so a lot later, and I worked at the coffee shop on campus called Aromas, and I was a barista. So I don't know, like, I mean, coffee's food.
Coffee,
but
I always feel like that's food adjacent. Like
it does feel food adjacent, even though it's food.
You're in the industry. Yeah, it's, yeah.
But coffee people consider themselves, like, kind of separate people. Mm-hmm. So we can either count that. Although there was food, and I did have a memorable moment there because yours truly never likes anyone to be picked on, always wants to bring people into the fold. Mm-hmm. And I remember on my first day, they were asking me, obviously everyone makes the new person do like the grunt work, which usually if you're in a restaurant means doing most of the running of food because mm-hmm. no one wants to do it. And they kept telling me I was like running downstairs to the kitchen and then running upstairs and getting winded. And I was just like, gosh, I don't know how you people do this. And they were like, well, why don't you just use the dumbwaiter? And they kept saying that. And I finally snapped and I was like, I don't think it's okay to be calling someone the dumbwaiter. I think that's very unkind. And I don't know who it is, but I refuse to partake in
but
this.
I have an idea who it is. I just, I must defend them, but it's not cool. I know who it is.
Which, you know, when they all started laughing and then showed me to the dumbwaiter, I realized, oh, it was me.
You were the dumbwaiter.
I was the dumbwaiter. I was the dumbwaiter. So, you know, that's when I kind of learned that, like, it is sort of its own world. It has mm-hmm. its own terms of art and things like that. And, so I think that was my first one. And then basically just kept doing front of house jobs for a mm-hmm. long time and was always the person who hung out at the pass.
So what was your first, like, often. Back of house job?
When I opened my own restaurant.
Oh, okay.
I was, you do a little at the bottom and then shoot for the stars.
For the top, yeah.
I opened my own restaurant in 2011, and it mostly came from the fact that, like, by the time I was food obsessed and coming out of law school and having worked as a human rights lawyer for a while and wanting to have a change that just had a more immediate sense of having an impact on my community. You know, basically give someone a cookie, they smile. I feel so much better than writing a memo and not knowing if anyone gives a shit. Because I looked around and it was like the food I wanted to make was not the food being made. And I was, you know, just young enough and confident enough to think that, well, I'll just figure it out.
Yeah.
I can do it. How hard can it be? Mm-hmm. You give people food, they smile, it's great. It'll work out. And then it largely did. We won a lot of awards. And so, like, I was validated in my horrible endeavor to do things on my own. It was like I launched this cafe called Red Bread, which is still the name of my business that I use that has morphed throughout the years. And we did sourdough. We did all whole grains and we preserved everything in house. And I think now if you're in Los Angeles or most of the country, that sounds
like standard.
Normal, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the time, that was outrageous. And most people who I befriended in the food community would, like, laugh at me. I remember telling people I had organized my kitchen on the basics of human rights and international development. And they were like, why would you do that? And I was like, I don't know, human dignity, living wage? Is this not something we all want to do? And they're like, absolutely not. And now it's, like, illegal not to. So I had that cafe for about 4 years before we closed it down.
And what has it morphed into now?
Since then, for a while it morphed into just consulting for fine dining. Mm-hmm. And so I worked around town at like Rosso Blue and Manuela and Rustic Canyon and led their pastry programs for several years at a time. And since the pandemic, it's gone back to its original form of being a micro bakery, mm-hmm. which I love talking about because it's like, that's what it was before, but I didn't have the language and people also didn't understand the concept of getting food on the internet and then picking it up.
Yeah.
But now they do. Now it's, again, that's
like standard.
Normal. Yeah. and it's a really great way to have, I think, finally a sense of work-life balance to a degree where I can at least
I was going to say, you're bullshitting me right now.
I mean, I recently talked to someone and I was like, I'm still a slave, but I have the keys to myself. But I think it also gives me the opportunity to take on more interesting work and do more things when those things come up. So, yeah. What was your first job in food?
My first legal job in food was working at SeaWorld. I worked in a restaurant, and it was supposed to be one summer, like, fresh out of high school. I got a job working in, like, the pizza place, and it was, like, you know, it's a bunch of 17-year-olds who, like, don't care. But my goal was, like, I want to work in the bakery here, which, like, you know. And what was supposed to be one summer turned into 4.5 years. That was back when I was just, like, so easily, like, taken advantage of, as we all are.
Yeah, for, like, ooh,
she just wants to work hard. So, yeah, I worked there for 4 years, and then my grandma died, and I was like, I can't keep doing this. Like, my grandma moved to America to give me a better life. There's no way I'm going to spend my life working at SeaWorld. And there was this OC-based bakery that was opening a location in San Diego, and I was like, fuck it. All I want to do is bake, so, like, I'm just going to apply. And I did, and I got the job, and that was, like, the start of, like, my pastry career was that job.
I love that you knew so young this is what you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. I knew, like, long, like, in high school, I was definitely, like, there's no other option for me. Like, when everyone was, like, applying to school, I was, like, I'm not going to college. Like, I just want to bake. And my mom was, like, you can go to college for that. And I was, like, I don't want to go to college. I just want to bake. And she was, like, if you're going to live under my roof, you're going to go to college. And so I went to community college for French because I was like, that makes
sense. Yeah, it's useful.
Yeah.
In a kitchen.
Yeah. But the school I went to is Grossmont in San Diego, and they have an amazing culinary program. And so I would take, like, those classes as well. And I was like, yeah, like, I cannot do anything else. And that was at the same time I was working at the bakery. And after I finished all the pastry classes that the school had to offer, I didn't want to take the savory ones and, like, get a degree because I was like, I could give a rat's ass about savory cooking. And so I
don't need any vegetables.
I need someone else to prepare a steak for me. Like,
you're like, I'm going to marry someone for that part of the menu.
That's my dream dynamic is, like, me, pastry chef, need chef partner.
I can't wait to read this like a personal ad.
it's on Craigslist right now.
It's just like a nonstop misconnection.
Just like, chef, saw hot chef, I'm pastry, love me. And so I dropped out of school because I was also learning so much more in the bakery I was working in than I was at the school anymore. And I was like, why am I going to pay for an education when I'm getting paid to make an education?
Which I think is great to know about the food world, which is, like, you know, if you are academically inclined, like, culinary school is a great avenue, but so much of what you will learn is so experiential.
Yes, and it's also so different from, like, what you learn in school and, like, the structure of at least the, like, program I was in. It was very, like, demo based, and then you would, like, and I know a lot of people who talk about, like, their experiences at, like, Le Cordon Bleu, where you literally just watch the instructor do it for, like, 8 hours and you barely get any, like, hands-on time. And, like, at the school we had, like, a Roboku that, like, worked perfectly, versus when I was in a kitchen, it's like I had to take, like, a pencil and, like, jam it into the hole to, like, get it to start. And, like, none of the equipment that you work on in a kitchen is, like, ever as pristine as it is at school. I'd rather learn in the very scrappy way and then transition to, like, something a lot nicer.
Yeah, build character.
Build character. and so, yeah, I quit school to keep working and learning, and that's what I did, and now I am here.
And then you went on to work for some other great places, right?
So after
Mr. Holmes.
Yeah, so after I left Black Market Bakery. That was the first bakery I worked in. I went to work at this like random like ice cream shop. They did the like unicorn milkshakes with like so much red 40 and like so yellow. Gen Z. And it was like, well, okay, I was also during the time that I was quitting school and focusing on work, I was also pretty sick, and my doctor was like, hey, this is like all stress related. So if you just cut the stress from your life, you'll be good.
And like, I was like, but then I'd have to leave food.
I'd have to just so you want me to die? Like, because I, so I was like,
stress is life.
Yeah. I'm fueled by cortisol. So I went to working in this like ice cream shop for like 5 months, and I was like, I can't do this, because like the food wasn't good. Yeah. The cakes were from a box, and I was like, this is taking like pieces of my soul. Like, this is not what I'm meant to do. I may not be stressed on paper, but like, I am so stressed by this. And I had a friend who was moving to San Francisco, and she was like, come with me. I'm moving up there for school in 3 weeks. Like, come with me. And I was like, okay. And I got a job at Mr. Holmes. That was the only place I applied. They only had front of house. And I was like, I just have to get my foot in the door, because the only experience I have is that first bakery and then milkshakes. So I got my foot in the door, and they were like, why did you apply for front of house? Like, you have, like, we saw your Instagram feed, and like, you look like you know what you're doing. And I was like, I don't. And so they were like, we will have you do like a 50-50. And within a year, I was then promoted to being like in charge of recipe and flavor development recipe and flavor development for the cruffins and donuts on the menu. Nice. Which was
which
like,
were like viral sensations.
Which were like insane. And so my entire career is like predicated on like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but if you give me the opportunity, I will figure it out.
And then you moved to LA and started I Bake Mistakes?
I was I Bake Mistakes ever since that first job, and it was because my grandma, she knew how to use Instagram, but she wanted to see everything that I was doing, so I started posting there, and I was like, oh, I need like a baker's name, and I didn't just want to be like Cakes by Cassie or Cassie Cakes. And I was like, I Bake Mistakes, that's like funny.
It is very funny.
Hilarious. Ha ha ha. It's like my Ken laugh. Anyways, so I started I Bake Mistakes then, and it just carried. And so, like, I think if you scroll, like, all the way back, there's, like, some of my very first stuff. Mm. Yeah, so I moved to LA to continue the recipe and development job for Mr. Holmes. I moved down here in 2019. Right before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then I got laid off 4 months into the pandemic. And that's when I started making cakes like the rest of the internet. Mm-hmm. And it really took off from there.
Which is kind of exactly when we met each other too, because of that.
Yeah. Which, like I said, when someone I'm crushing on follows me back, the day Rose followed me back on Instagram, I like did a little happy dance. So I was like, because I found you when you did the Firehouse Hotel.
That was Bennett. 2019.
Yeah. So that's how I found you. And I was like, wow. And I was like, obsessed.
And then you followed me back,
and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I thought you were so naturally like, talented. What? And I was like, how have I not heard of this bitch? I've been in LA for so long.
She's a newbie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my entire journey through food, not just my first job.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's good to have this whole thing. You know, but I think that this is my theory about why cakes took off so much in the pandemic, and more like my personal reasoning. And the theory part is that everyone had the same impulse, which was that we weren't able to gather anymore. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed so bad. There was nothing but bad news. And there was this real sense for me that we were so capable of providing the joy and the magic. And if we just kept reminding people that, like, happiness for happiness sake was its own revolution, then we could turn the tide in some small way. Definitely. And every time I made a cake, it made me happy. It made me think that I could survive that day. And therefore other people. And yeah. It was really amazing to see that resonate with
like everyone.
Yeah. Everyone.
I think that wave also, though, was the start of a renaissance in pastry.
Yeah.
Because it was pastry chefs. Like cakes before that were so... not basic.
No, I think basic. Like, they were in a tight little box.
Yeah, they were in a very small box. And it was just like chocolate, vanilla, red velvet. And it was always like kind of decorated the same. And like everything was the same. And then pastry chefs all lost their jobs and all started making cake. And like seeing now even like home bakers and how they approach cake and food.
Has really
like,
changed.
It's really changed. Yeah. And they've always been badass. Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more about the labels that were applied because classically when a restaurant feels like they're not doing well, the first people on the chopping block are the pastry chefs and the pastry program. But I think what was unique about the pandemic was that because everyone felt that way, all of us lost our jobs at the same time. And suddenly you went from having to be in this like tight little box of like fitting with the chef's menu and having the chef taste all your stuff and doing what they wanted to taking everything you knew and you found inspiring and creative, being exposed to the same incredible ingredients you might have been in a restaurant or not, just like in your culture and at markets, and you were able to just have a direct connection to people.
Yeah.
And I think that people started trusting themselves more. Mm-hmm. And the more each one of us did this, the more it emboldened each other. And I think that transition from like professional pastry chef to being a pastry chef at home, like what was the difference then between a home baker and you?
Exactly.
And I feel like maybe that's always been true. I mean, there's certainly something to being a pro and knowing a little more complexity that gives you a little edge in terms of like the fluency of the language and what you're able to produce. But there are so many talented people who have like never necessarily worked in our industry who might find it challenging to do a 100-person event, but would not like, find it. But
like can kill
a cake. Yeah, could totally kill a cake. And so I think there's room to be inspired by everyone everywhere. Everyone has something to teach. Everyone has something to share. So if you're at home baking in a closet, like open the door, show yourself to the world.
And choose a new fun flavor to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also like having the experience of like working in kitchens and being exposed to like all these different ingredients that once you do like take it back home, you like now have that like jumping off point and I felt like you didn't have to ask permission to do anything. Like you literally could do whatever flavor you wanted. And people were like, yeah, I want it. Sure. Crazy. But I want it.
Yeah. They were more adventurous. Yeah.
When I was working like R&D at Mr. Holmes, I was constantly having to like run every single flavor by someone else and like get it approved and have to advocate for why I thought an apple pie cruffin would be good. That, I mean, that's pretty like a basic flavor, but I have to justify like, every
sale. Yeah. And like, they're like,
is this the demographic we're trying? And I'm like, that's your job. My job is you just hired me to make delicious things.
Yeah.
That's how I feel right now. Like he's talking to me about numbers and I'm like, okay, don't talk numbers to me, baby.
Well, someone recently told me that, you know, everything is design, like whether or not we're talking strict design or flavor or whatever, and that there are two ways to approach design, which is that you can go out and do surveys and gather data and figure out what people want and then make that. Or you can figure out what you want to make and hope someone else likes it. Yeah. And that, for the most part, artists work exclusively in the latter.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that this renaissance really was like, of artists and choosing to make what you wanted.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was tons of people who liked that because all of our flavor desires and our palates are incredibly complex and informed by culture and experiences, and they don't fall neatly into chocolate, vanilla. You know, you said red velvet. I don't acknowledge that existence, so I'm going to sub strawberry.
Good. I'm not.
But anyway, so that's a little intro to our food experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested because we said we're going to introduce whole people. What is something outside of kitchen, outside of food, that you're really passionate about that like fills your time?
Everything in my life is just so tied to food. But through my newsletter, Bake Chats, on Substack, I've started interviewing my friends, and I have a big special soft spot in my heart for music. I love listening to music. I can't not listen to music. I love music. My dad worked at Circuit City when I was growing up, and like back R.I.P. in the early right I wish they were still around, because like my car sometimes needs like a few circuits fixed and there's no longer a city for it. But they used to have this like, it wasn't like a switchboard, but they would put like new CDs that were released, and they would have them, and it was this like station that had like,
oh, with the headphones.
With the headphones, and yeah, then you could like play like samples love of that. The song. And since we didn't really have childcare for me and my sister growing up, we like grew up in either the hospital my mom worked at or Circuit City, just depending on who could like watch us.
Yeah.
And so I would just be on the floor for like hours at a time with these disgusting over-ear headphones on, just like constantly like, you know, playing different songs. And so that definitely like expanded like my taste in music, because it would be like I'm listening to Toxic by Britney Spears and then also like some song by Creed, and it's yeah, like, or whatever. And so music has like always carried through my life, and so I really enjoy making playlists. And then so tying that back into like my newsletter, I've started interviewing friends, and I ask each and every one of them to share 5 to 8 songs that they're like currently loving, and then I like blend that into a playlist of like the songs they like and things I think they would like based on the songs they shared and what they provide, like what I've learned in the like deep dives that I do on them and the answers that they're giving back to me.
I love that. So, I mean, you're basically making everyone like a really romantic mixtape.
Yeah, exactly. That's like which, when I was in high school, this guy gave me a mixtape, but it was all his favorite Metallica songs.
Oh,
I hated it.
I had that boyfriend in college who gave me a CD of like emo songs I needed to know, and I was like, but do it.
But then I had to pretend it, like, it was so romantic for him to give it to me, even though I hated every single song.
Yeah, but
song
he did spend time on it. Yeah. So you like, men, they try.
He tried, and I was like, this is so bad, but this is everything I've ever wanted from a man. So yeah, I enjoy making all of my friends essentially mixtapes after I interview them.
I mean, like, I'm psyched to see mine, so, yeah, like, we're, you know.
I mean, I already cheated and sent you, like, the first song that's going to be
out. Oh, my, it's so good. I played it, like, 10 times, yes, so it's perfect.
Yeah. What is Rose outside of the kitchen? Who is she?
I mean, I still kind of lean on my other, my previous lives. long before I was a human rights lawyer, I was an actor, so I consume a lot of films and read a lot of plays still, but I think mostly it's, like, anything that I can do with my hands, so if I have any time, if I have any downtime, I am usually painting something, usually a large abstract piece, or I am trying to learn how to like crochet or weave something. One of the things I do a lot right now is kintsugi, which is the Japanese art of mending, where instead of hiding the broken pieces, you highlight them with gold. Okay. And a lot of this is from necessity because of dropping and breaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But feeling very attached to them and wanting to fix them. So yeah. If I have like a day where I don't have anything to do, which is rare and rare, it's really fun to like kind of mix that pottery together and then the epoxy and then paint it gold. And so anything that's really meditative and I can still like create, I think is like the main magic of it. So yeah, it's mostly like
hand stuff,
arts and crafts. Yeah,
under the table hand stuff. Yeah, I love that too.
So Cassie's other thing is making everything dirty.
Oh no, you can crochet under the table. You never did that.
But also, you know, like just making more time for community and friends and like having gatherings and stuff, because I think what one of the things about doing this more isolated and working for yourself is that you're often
working for yourself. Yeah.
I mean, the dream is that you're in charge of your own schedule, but the reality is that like humans are very social creatures, and even if you like don't like your job, there is a certain fulfillment of like being people. Around people mm-hmm. and having that input. So it's very meaningful to me to like reach out and make friends and make plans and organize picnics, which yes. we do often together.
I love
together.
A pastry picnic.
Yeah.
That is a big passion of mine. Which is, I like when we say like outside of food, I'm like, that is food for me. And then, so like, I'm like, that doesn't count when
but
we
I ask think
this
it's
question,
like but... outside of directly making yeah. food and like that sort of streamline of commerce yeah. of your art form. Because mm-hmm. I think that anyone who is identifying as an artist but then commodifies it needs another artistic endeavor to give yourself a break mm-hmm. and let your brain kind of switch gears.
And just exist. Yeah. It's nice to let my brain just like do its thing without trying to like wrangle my brain.
Yeah.
It's really hard having ADHD.
I mean,
because
even if
my
you...
brain is like, just let me free. And I'm like, no, brain, we really have to focus on what we're doing right now. And it's like, no, I just want to roam. I just want to have a picnic. And I'm like, no, brain, get back here.
I think even if you don't have ADHD, though, like the problem is that like the idea that if you follow your bliss and make that your job, you'll never work a day in your life
bullshit.
Is total bullshit. It's a lie. I really hope we stop saying that to young people. In fact, if you follow your bliss, you will never stop working.
You will work harder than you've ever worked
in
your life.
And it becomes an additional job to try and carve out time for just your life. Mm-hmm. You know, which is not to say that, like, therefore find something you hate and do that so that you can clock out at 5 and not give
and
a
then,
fuck.
And then go do what you love. Like, that's yeah. also not. Yeah.
But I think that it's at least, like, it makes more sense to be transparent about, mm-hmm. like, what these paths mean.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, if I can travel, anytime I can travel, I want to take that opportunity. And in many ways, the way to do that has often been to like call
work.
Up someone. Yeah, call up someone and be yeah. like, hey, you want to collaborate? Because I want to come to New York.
And so... just kidding, we're not collaborating. We're just eating.
Yeah, you get there and you're like, oh, it's we're so overwhelmed. Time is short. Let's just eat in the park. but yeah, there's so many places that I just want to go to eat. What is a place you want to go just to eat?
Well, I recently renewed my passport, so I guess the world is now my oyster.
Yeah.
Which makes this answer so much harder to...
Because now there's options.
Because now there's options. If it was like, oh, I don't have a passport, so I can only do America. I think I would go back to Italy, specifically Venice.
Oh, okay.
There's this one pizza. And, like, I do not remember the name of the restaurant, but if you put me on the, like, boat to Venice and you drop me off at the harbor... I like a bloodhound. I had this in 2012, 12 years ago.
Wow.
I could sniff that shit out. I could, you just drop me off. You could do it blindfolded and I would find my way there. And then I would eat around that area once I found my pizza.
So back to Venice. Back to Venice,
back
Italy.
To Venice and pizza, pasta, endless. Like it's fucking Olive Garden.
I don't know if we've just like shouted out Olive Garden or like dissed Italy.
I
can't tell. Little of A, little
bit of both on accident. I would love to go back to France just to eat. But I guess I don't want to keep going back to like, I just, when I've had something I really like, I want to have it forever.
Mm.
So I do find myself just like, wanting to go back
wanting
to places
to
where I've had like a really good meal because I know it's gonna be good.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes you travel and then
trust
you,
issues,
and then you have a horrible meal or like a horrible croissant.
I feel like I forget those so quickly. Like I want to go
jaded.
New places
I'm
for
like,
food.
Where are we going? I'll go wherever you go.
Okay, like, I'll just
if you're a bird, I'm a bird, and I'm following you wherever you go to eat.
Well, this bird wants to go east. I have been dying to go to Japan for at least a decade now. I love noodles, you know, original pasta. I want to eat all the udon and all the ramen. I also want to go to the fish market in Japan. And I'm also dying to go to Southeast Asia, like Thailand and Vietnam.
Yeah.
Similar for the pho and for like the noodle dishes and pad thai and other things there. and just kind of explore that area of the world. If I were to go back somewhere to eat, it would definitely be Italy. I love pasta. I've worked at many Italian restaurants at this point. And, you know, I don't see that binary between the like savory and sweet kitchen. And like, so I make a ton of noodles and I make a ton of pasta. And so I'm always interested in learning more from there. I would also love to spend some more time in Portugal. I was only there for 3 days once. And I love their sensibility of tapas. You know, generally we think of Spanish tapas, but Portuguese tapas is much more seafood based. And I just really adored everything I ate in there. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's seafood that I just like, am obsessed with.
Yeah.
And if I can go eat seafood anywhere, that's usually where I want to go. I'd also love to eventually make my way back to where I grew up, which was Ecuador, because I love Latin American food. It's quite different than Mexican food. It's very different from Spanish food. And it would be really fun to have like those tastes of home outside of like my family preparing them.
Everywhere. I'm like, they're stamping your passport every like,
oh my god. We should mention that this podcast, which obviously you're totally enjoying, is not brought to you just by the lovely Cassie Mandieta and Rose Wild, but
because
also
we have no idea how to do all of this. So.
All right. Well, I'm not going to say I don't know how to use technology.
I don't. Oh my gosh. If I had
but
to do this,
we do have the lovely Casey Ann Shea, who is our producer extraordinaire, and you will hear from her later in the podcast. And she obviously goes wherever we go because she's got strong mom energy.
And she's my ride everywhere.
Some of us use that energy a little more than others.
I take it. I'm just a baby. That's my mommy over there.
So that's it. I mean, that's Kitchen Tape Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. And we hope you'll join us for more episodes in the future where we talk to some of the people we love the most and inspire us the most. And we think you will find fascinating as well.
We hope you'll join us in the future. And as we like to say, eat cute.
Be cute.
Bye.
I think that's
With
it.
That, is that enough for you, Mom?
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music was created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on Instagram. You can reach Rose at TRoseWild and Cassie at IBakeMistakes. Or email us at KitchenTapePod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.